Welcome to Money for the Rest of Us Plus. This is the companion episode 212, Trade Wars Increase Poverty and Prices. It's Saturday mornings, July, July 14th, 2018. And in today's episode, I have a question on why not just invest in short-term treasuries or ladder a short-term treasury portfolio as opposed to investing in a short-term or ultra-short-term ETF. And we're going to do the math, kind of look at that comparison. I have a question from a member on just getting married, has somewhat of a different philosophy regarding money management from his fiance. We're going to talk a little bit about that, particularly as it relates to hiring an outside money manager. And then I want to share a development on real estate in the New York area, which I think is just, it's actually kind of a fascinating example of what's going on there. First, on the episode 212, I gotten some feedback from listeners. Some didn't like it, some thought maybe a little too political. Trade is a complicated topic, as you know. And I wasn't trying to be political because I don't really have a political view, you know, as it relates to, or at least I try to avoid conveying a political view. I don't spend a whole lot of time talking about the Trump administration or when the Obama administration was in the Obama administration. I'm more interested in sort of these complex, nuanced topics like trade. Trade clearly has increased global wealth and has had a huge impact on China. And yet I've talked about on the podcast just the complexities with that. There was so much we couldn't cover in that episode. The fact that the things we've covered earlier, the trade deficit with China means China owns a large amount of government bonds. We didn't talk about how the Chinese have kept their currency significantly weak. We didn't even get into the topic of every trade deficit is offset by a capital account surplus and whether the trade deficit is being driven by investment flows into a country. So I just try to focus more on the poverty elimination aspect of trade and the complex adaptive system aspect of it, how companies adapt or automatically adapt. Now, I guess one political view is I don't think broad brush tariffs or blanket tariffs is the best solution. I don't really consider that a political view. It's just more my economic opinion and a recognition that trade, global trade, has caused inequality, particularly as it's pushed downward pressure on blue or on worker wages because they're competing in a global marketplace. And we didn't even get to talk about the solutions for inequality, which we've talked about in other episodes. So part of maybe what would seem one side in the episode is just I try to keep it to 30 minutes. Just because that's typical, that's about all I can stand to listen at any one time. So I assume others can. But anyway, it was a fun episode to do. I have another interesting episode this week. My view on health insurance has changed significantly from this book, Priceless, that I mentioned in episode 212. Don't necessarily agree with everything in the book, but the idea of incentives and how incentives change behavior. So we'll talk about that next week. Today, though, an interesting question. I had to run through the math. Here, a member wanted to ask, why not use, as I mentioned, a laddered short-term treasury bond portfolio? So you would own some one-year treasury bonds, some two-year treasury bonds, hold them to maturity, collect the yield, as opposed to buying a ultra short-term bond ETF, such as ICSH, which is currently in the model portfolios, or NEAR, which was in there for a year or so. And there's really two reasons why I prefer and think the ETF is a better strategy. We're in a rising rate environment where the Federal Reserve is actively raising short-term interest rates. And going out and buying one-year treasuries or two-year treasuries will generate lower returns than owning a short-term, ultra-short-term bond ETF if the Federal Reserve continues to raise interest rates. And I'll share the numbers with you. The second reason even if the returns were the same, and they're not, it was more profitable to use an ETF strategy. But if they were the same, using the ETF gives you more optionality, more flexibility to exit and go where there are other opportunities. Because in a rising rate environment, if you own, for example, let's say you bought a two-year treasury in a two-year treasury bond 1 year ago, it was yielding 0.6%. Now the two-year treasury is yielding 1.4%. And so had you bought that two-year treasury a year ago, even intending to hold it to maturity, but if you wanted to sell it, you would have essentially the return on a one-year basis is negative 0.3%. Because rates are going up and there's still some duration or interest rate sensitivity to the two-year bond. For example, the one-year treasury bond right now, U.S. government treasury bond, 1 year is yielding 2.39%. The two-year is yielding 2.6%. 1 year ago, the one-year treasury was yielding 1.2%, and the two-year treasury was yielding, looks like, 1.4%. So you've had rates rise, and had you sold that two-year treasury that was bought a year ago, you would have sold it at a loss. The total return was negative 0.3% over the past year. And so the idea of just buying and holding, you're essentially locking in that yield. So a year ago, had you bought a one-year treasury, it would have matured and you would have earned 1.2%. But had you bought ICSH or NEAR, these are short-term ETFs, ICSH returned 1.8% over the past year, and NEAR returned 1.6%. And the reason why they've done better is because rates have continued to rise since they're shorter term. They're very low duration. And so they're just picking up that higher and reinvesting at those higher yields, as opposed to had you just bought a one-year treasury, you would have locked in that 1.2% yield. Let's go back 2 years. This is ending June. Had you 2 years ago, had you decided, I'm just going to lock in, the two-year treasury, so this would have been June 2016, was yielding 0.6%. So your return would have been 0.6%. Had you held that bond, kind of a laddered strategy, then you obviously would reinvest. But a 0.6% annualized return, ICSH over the past 2 years, ending June 30th, 2018, returned 1.5%, and NEAR returned 1.5%, also annualized. And so that's why I prefer the ETF, short-term ETF strategy in this rising rate environment versus another strategy. Now, if rates were falling, then perhaps, yeah, then you want to consider, you know, if the Fed was in the process, we've peaked out, the risk of recession is higher, and it looks like they're signaling that they've finished raising rates, perhaps starting to reduce rates. That's when you want to lock in rates, maybe even go longer than 2 years. At that point, we may buy the 10-year treasury or even the 30-year treasury, depending on your risk. But there, then it makes sense to lock in those higher yields. But in this environment where the Federal Reserve has signaled they're going to continue to raise rates, owning alter short-term bonds through an ETF, you benefit from that reinvesting at those higher yields, and that will do better than just by doing a laddered portfolio of short-term treasuries or just going straight out and buying the two-year treasury bond. Okay, our next question. The new member is going to be married soon in a year and says he's likely to merge the resources to better facilitate joint investing with his fiancé. He writes, I'm fascinated by finances, investing, and economics, but my fiancé couldn't care less. She has a healthy amount in the bank, but it's just sitting there, and she wants to pay a money manager to invest for her and whatnot. Well, I feel I could do decently, still honing my own skill. When is the point when you feel it is best to go with a money manager? Should I ask them what their yield is? And if they're consistently 15 to 25% plus a year in and year out, better than I likely could do? And then maybe I'll invest with them. Should I inquire whether they actively manage the money or use that as the determining factor, good or bad? Or should I clarify how they make their money, whether they only get paid if they make me money? Or should I just abandon the idea altogether, manage my own money rather than my fiancé's, since I feel more comfortable enough to manage my own? That's an interesting... There's a couple takeaways here on that question. If you can identify a manager that consistently earns 15 to 25% a year and will do an incentive fee and not charge you unless he actually earns that, go hire him. The problem is they just don't exist. The best manager I know that has consistently earned, but not even consistently anymore. I've mentioned Seth Klarman, Baupost Group, long-term annualized return is 15 to 18%. That's net of fees. But even the last few years, it's been struggle for them. It seems like I mentioned in a podcast, I think he did 5% maybe last year. So the market's going to give what it's going to give, even if you're a skilled money manager. And the reality is for individual investors, the managers that are really skilled, and there's not many, they're usually closed or their account minimums are too high. So not that one shouldn't hire a planner there have been members of Money for the Restless Plus that have outside managers. But we have to keep the expectation that they're there, hopefully, to do as well as the market, but it does take burden. Some individuals just don't want to manage their own money, and that's fine. You keep the fees as low as possible, but don't expect magic. So most traditional managers will not work for an incentive fee or some type of performance-based fee. I think in this situation, it probably makes sense to keep, to manage her own money and kind of let her do with her retirement how she wants to do it for now. I mean, there's so much that comes together when you get married. Oh, when I got married, we had no money at all, so this really wasn't an issue. But there's enough going on when you first get married this would not be something that I would overly concern myself with. Continue to manage your skills. Eventually, several years out, you can kind of revisit the topic. But for now, I wouldn't, this is not something I would worry about. But I don't think there's a manager that can achieve the type of returns that you've talked about there. Some of the resources that I use, I occasionally get asked, well, what are you subscribing to, or what do you find interesting? And so I used to get, or I still get, a free newsletter called The Daily Shot, which is a daily email, I guess, when the market's open, puts together just really interesting economic graphs or things that are going on. And then it got taken over by the Wall Street Journal, and I actually subscribed to the Wall Street Journal just to get this Daily Shot email. And So that's something that I look at on a regular basis just because I find fascinating. But the other thing that I read when the market's open, a daily newsletter, is called Almost Daily Grants. It's by Grants Interest Rate Observer. It's free. Just go on their site and you can sign up for it. And they usually have some interesting stories. Sometimes they pull from, you know, update maybe a recent episode or a recent story that they did for their paid newsletter, which I went ahead and subscribed. They offered an incentive. So I subscribed to it. It's like $1,000 a year, which is a lot of money for a newsletter. But I did it anyway because there are some interesting stories. But the Almost Daily Grants is free, so sign up for that. But they sent a story the other day, update. They were talking about real estate, and we talked about housing a couple episodes ago. And they pointed out that nationwide, well, basically housing prices have increased over the past year nationally. And I think it was up 5 to 6%. And the reason, one of the statistics is Redfin shows that the average home was only on the market for 34 days in May. And so that's a record. The record low was 36 months, and that was a year ago. In Denver, the average listing lasted just 6 days in May. That's amazing. So there's not a whole lot of supply. It's pushing up prices. Inventory's dropping. And we talked about in that, what do you do when there's a housing boom? There is very little inventory, and you kind of have to, if you really want to buy a house, you kind of have to know what the whisper listings are. Who's thinking about listing their house? But this is the interesting part. They talked about what's going on in New York, residential real estate in Manhattan. The sales plunged in, looks like May or the second quarter. They're down 16% from a year ago. That's the lowest since 2009. And the median sales price has fallen 7.5% over the past year. Inventory is up 11%. In the second quarter. And they mentioned this is just not just in one borough. You're seeing this in Brooklyn, Queens, the Westchester suburbs. The question is why? Well, again, this is where, you know, actions by government can have an impact on our finances, which is why we can't ever not talk about government actions or political actions. And in this case, it's the Tax Cuts and Job Act, where it capped state and local tax deductions at $10,000. And in a high tax state like New York, that's having an impact. It's a less desirable place to own. I like this quote from Jonathan Miller. He's the CEO and co-founder of the real estate appraisal firm Miller Samuel. And Grants asked him, how much do they think that change is impacting behavior? Here's what Miller replied. There is nothing positive in the tax law as it relates to housing. The best case is neutral. The worst case, as negative as you can think. So the tax law is impacting some of these high-priced, high-tax states. And certainly, on top of that, we've had mortgage rates are up. So the mortgage rate for a 30-year mortgage is 4.39% this past week. That's up from 3.7% in September. So that's making it more difficult. But that's kind of an update to see, you know, we've had some booming housing markets. Rates are higher, but the impact of the tax, change in the tax code certainly is impacting it. I don't know if we're at the end there. I just thought it was an interesting data set. So that is Plus Episode 212.